Well, hello, guys. Welcome. This is another episode of Undone Redone, the podcast where we are celebrating what is true, real, and authentic in our world. My name is Trey Lovern, and I'm here with my gorgeous bride, Melody.
Hello. We're so glad that you joined us today.
Well, today we're at episode number 4, and we are calling this episode The Case for Abstinence, and just really want to dive into this topic and really look at it, abstinence and purity, and going beyond just the, let's don't have sex because the Bible says it's wrong stance. Now, that's very, very true, but want to broaden that a little bit and really just dive in and unpack this and really look deeper and help individuals and parents not only understand this maybe from a broader perspective, but also develop a specific plan for abstinence. Maybe, and let's just kind of set the stage. We know we've got many listeners, some are listening that maybe you're a parent and you've got children and you're really looking at this and wanting to tune in order to get some ideas about parenting as it relates to abstinence and purity.
Or you're single, yes, and maybe you have made that decision and you want to talk a little bit more about that subject and really some of the parameters, the plan that really needs to come with making that decision. Or, for myself, Trey, both of us having been married and as well as being divorced, you may be either married or divorced, and then you may even be a single parent,
yes,
looking at possibly marrying again.
Yes.
And needing to make a decision on your future as far as that goes.
Yeah. Last Friday night, I had the incredible opportunity to go with my two daughters to what we called here in Birmingham a White Rose Ball. It was a Birmingham's Purity Ball. And man, what a powerful experience to, one, be able to dress up. And as we talked about, I think it was episode 2, the desires of a girl and a woman's heart, that desire to be valued and pursued. So it was just really neat, to have a ball, a celebration where we could get dressed up for, make it about the girls, and to be a part of something where all these fathers and daughters were coming together around the topic of purity and really a commitment to purity. And I think that's what I walked away from that is really knowing and thinking, this is not something that just happens by accident.
That's right.
You can't expect in the world and the culture that we live in to maintain purity or to stay committed to a policy of abstinence without at least a game plan going in. But, to be there with some friends of mine and meet some other guys that have their daughters there with them, to be able to make that commitment together with them, and then to celebrate that commitment as we really celebrated them. It was just really, really a powerful experience. And just I was able to get them a purity ring, which I'd been wanting to do for some time. And in our story, Melody, because we were divorced for 6 years, and being out of the home, a lot of what I really had wanted to do even before I got married, was some of that was kind of interrupted because of the time apart and the way that my life got sidelined. And so this was something that I've always wanted to do, is come together and really make it about my girls, give them this purity ring, and really talk specifically about what purity means and how we get there.
Well, and I just think, as a mom, getting to see that, there was nothing more exciting than watching them get dressed up and, be the belle of the ball with their father. And just to get to see them come home and the looks on their faces was just, it was a priceless moment. Not only their commitment that they've made for themselves, but their commitment to you. And now really their commitment to each other as sisters to help each other as they've committed to abstinence and purity. I think is really going to be helpful.
Yeah. I was in local Christian bookstore buying these purity rings and just kind of shopping, see what the options were. And I called you, Melody, because of this overwhelming emotion that I had. I just found myself, as I'm reading some of these cards and I'm looking at these purity rings, and I still am getting in touch with what was really bubbling up and I was feeling, but just overwhelming this idea of, the sobering moment, the what's at stake when you start talking about our girls and their value, their purity, their being created uniquely by our Heavenly Father, and just being able to celebrate that. But with everything that is precious, there's also this idea of protection, this guarding, and Scripture is full of those types of warnings, you know, to guard our heart. And so I think as we approach this case for absence, again, this is not just something that's going to happen automatically. Our culture is too saturated with message after message after message of sex to think that this is going to happen overnight. There are some good news culturally, and a little of the stats we were looking at. The good news is that today, 2013, teen pregnancy rates are the lowest they've been in 24 years. And that's great news. The bad news, though, is yes, we've put so much emphasis on teen pregnancy, and that's very important. And thank goodness we are seeing that drop. But the bad news is that 10,000 teenagers per day are today contracting a sexually transmitted disease. And
every
that's something we haven't talked about
day.
As much.
Every day. Yeah.
And that's, you know, in one of the articles I was reading, and we've got friends who are in this crisis pregnancy type ministry, and I heard many stories of these women walking in and maybe having negative results, and this the
and
relief.
They're like, "Phew, yes, I'm not pregnant."
Absolutely, because that's what they were focused on. I don't want to be pregnant. How's that going to change my life? And so they have this wave of relief if the test comes back negative. But then what they're able to tell them, wait a minute, well, we haven't done the test
for the STDs,
and there's this long list of sexually transmitted diseases, many that are there's no cure for, many that lead to infertility, and really life altering type things that will be with them literally the rest of their lives. So what is the big deal about abstinence? And kind of the way we want to come at this is looking at it through the lens of four myths about abstinence, and we want to kind of look at these myths, unpack them, and talk through them.
Well, and as it relates to television, Trey, I know as we were doing some of the research on this subject matter, we came across The Bachelor.
Yes.
And, you know, we're not watching The Bachelor in our home, but as we did some research, some looking around on the internet, that Sean Lowe, the current season Bachelor, has made a stance, and I believe has talked about it on numerous television shows and radio shows and that type of thing, that he is waiting to have sex until he's married. Until he's married. So he has chosen abstinence until marriage, which is very interesting because there's all these opportunities, I believe, on The Bachelor for him to not abstain if he doesn't want to.
Yeah, I think it's tonight's episode. I know this show will be airing after Monday, but this is being recorded on a Monday, and tonight's episode of The Bachelor is about the overnight dates. And that whole show, I think he's narrowed down to three ladies, and now the show gives them these overnight
opportunities.
And we'll get into some of the myths that are kind of, you know, at the heart of why they do that. But it is. He's made this stance. So I saw even a magazine headline that said the awkwardness of these overnight dates because of his stance, as you mentioned, for abstinence. And the reality is, you know, the myth number one, let's just go ahead and put it out there.
Yeah.
Myth number one is if I wait, I'm missing out.
Right.
And definitely culture sends that message. There's so much of this. It's not a decision, okay, are you going to have sex or not? It's almost like culturally the message is, if anybody out there is saying they're not and going against the grain with that stance, it's almost like those individuals are looked at like there's something wrong with them,
right,
or there's something. It's almost like a crazy notion that anyone would want to wait.
Absolutely. I think not only just if I'm waiting, I'm missing out, but I think there's just this thought about, I have to do this because of peer pressure. I have to do this because everybody else is doing this, but I don't want to walk into marriage not having some kind of experience or something along those lines. So let's talk a little bit about why that's a myth. You know, God created sex. We understand that. It's a precious gift. It's a beautiful thing that two people, when they wait, can experience together. But how do we make that happen?
Well, I mean, the myth, if I wait, I'm missing out. The reality is, it is a precious gift. And with everything that's precious, there are boundaries around that.
Right.
God has given us this gift. Let's be honest. God created it. It is an invention of our maker, mm-hmm. This gift of sexual intimacy. Song of Solomon is a book that is, if you ever wonder, is God for sex? I mean, here's a book of scripture that is all about romantic sexual intimacy.
Right.
He's for it. And he wants what's best for us. And so with that, he has to put boundaries around that, because without those boundaries, it's no longer special. It's no longer something that is precious. So inside those boundaries, sex is awesome. Mm-hmm. It is as our Creator intended it to be. He is good. He's for us. Because part of this myth is, if I wait, I'm missing out, mm-hmm. is that somehow... folks who are of faith are anti-fun or anti-sex, all that. No, we are absolutely for that. If anything, mm-hmm. we want to make sure we protect it so that individuals are experiencing sex as it was intended to be, as mm-hmm. God made it. It's horribly destructive, sex is, outside of those boundaries. And
right.
we can, you know, read story after story after story of that reality.
One of the things that I found it interesting as we were doing some homework on this as well is it was talking about couples that have engaged in sexual activity before marriage and now they're engaged. The months leading up to the wedding, it actually talked about a number of couples actually abstaining for that 3, 4, 5 month period before marriage, all to make the wedding night more special.
Yeah.
And I found that so interesting. Even the guys, you mm-hmm. know, it even said that some of the guys that found it very difficult to abstain before marriage, that during that period, again, not abstaining forever, but abstaining that period, said that they found that it made the honeymoon much more meaningful.
Yeah.
Which again takes me back to, if abstaining the 3 or 4 or 5 months before marriage, all to make the honeymoon much more special, how much more if we take that all the way back and we wait all the way up until we find that one individual and we marry that one individual, how special that evening and that honeymoon and that lifetime sexual experience will be between the two people that yeah. have waited.
Yeah, it's almost like people who bought into the cultural lie that mm-hmm. if you're close, if you're in a committed relationship, well, of course you're having sex. And people, maybe they're cohabitating, they're doing that, and then they decide to get married. And then they say, you know what? I want, yeah, we're kind of married. We're living almost having all the kind of the goods of marriage without being married mm-hmm. legally. But, you know, we want this to be special. We want our wedding night to be special. So let's wait. Let's do this abstinence period. And so we can make it more special. And it mm-hmm. kind of, that's the lie behind that myth, that if I wait, I'm missing out, because they're experiencing, even if they bought into the lie, hey, we're having sex, we're not going to abstain. But you're right. I mean, if people will wait as God planned it, mm-hmm. An entire lifetime before marriage, how much more meaningful that the wedding night can be.
Absolutely. So, well, myth two is I must discover if I'm sexually compatible and have experience before I get married. You know, I've yeah. got to find out with this one person that I want to spend the rest of my life with. I need to find out if I'm sexually compatible with that person before we get married.
Yeah, and that's kind of behind the underlying lie behind the what The Bachelor's doing on
right,
tonight's episodes.
Right.
You know, you've kind of narrowed it down from this field of however many start, and now you're down to three. You're getting serious about these mm-hmm. three. So we're going to give you this overnight experience to kind of, let's check it and see if you're sexually compatible. Mm-hmm. Is the spark mm-hmm. there? You know, and so many have bought into that, that really two sides of that. If we're sexually compatible individually, mm-hmm. but also that I can't go into marriage inexperienced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what if I don't have the experience, you know, when I get to my wedding night? What's that going to look like? So let's kind of unpack that a little bit.
Well, I think for me, I'm going to talk from my own personal experience. Mm-hmm. I think for me, you and I both waited we both waited until we got married to have sex with one another. And I think for me, when I think about freedom, walking into our honeymoon together, there may have been some, you know, some fear around, you know, this is my first time and different things like that. But the freedom of knowing that you had waited mm-hmm. all this time for that one person mm-hmm. to give yourself completely and solely to, and I had waited, mm-hmm. Same thing. To me, that opened up so many, just opened up so much opportunity for me to feel freedom in the relationship. We can learn together. We can experience together. We can grow together. And there was just this, there's a lot of things that I think come into play when you do have other partners. Mm-hmm. And I'll talk about that in just a minute, but I didn't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have to compare myself to anybody else. And I think that for me personally, that took a load off
yeah.
walking into marriage with you. There's so much freedom in that.
Yeah.
And really, you know, if I'm going to be really honest, you know, for those listeners out there, Trey and I were married for 11 years, and then we were divorced for 6 years. And we were divorced due to some infidelity and things like that, that Trey can talk about later. But when we remarried and we walked back into marriage together, and we did wait the second time as well, but I will tell you, I did not walk back into remarriage with you, Trey, the second time with the same freedom that I walked into marriage with you mm-hmm. the first time. Yeah. And because knowing now that you had had partners and that you had been with other people, there's just some natural insecurities that come with
sure.
that. Am I as good as that other partner? You know, am I, you know, just a lot of things that come out of that.
Yeah.
And so the freedom wasn't the same.
Yeah,
that doesn't mean that we can't still enjoy, you know, sexual intimacy and it be good and all that. But there just was some differences as mm-hmm. it related to that.
Yeah. So really it's the opposite of that. That's the lie that, mm-hmm. you know, the myth is I need to have experience before I get married. What if
right.
I don't? Really,
right.
what you're saying is that experience, as I came into the second marriage that you knew that I had because of my past, it led to insecurity. It wasn't mm-hmm. like, oh, goody, I get a more experienced partner.
No, not at all.
It took away this, hey, because really the first time we got married, there was this kind of, this is uncharted territory for both of us. And we get to explore the sexual domain together. We get to discover what we like together. We get to discover what we don't like together.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like the wedding night. And again, this is kind of that built-in lie to this myth that the wedding night has got to be this absolutely perfected sexual experience.
Absolutely not. There's actually some innocence about it.
Yes.
You know, that we get to walk in and actually say, well, we don't know.
That's right.
We don't know what we like. We don't know what feels good. I mean, yeah. there's a lot of that. And that's exciting to get to be comfortable enough with each other and with the relationship and now moving into this sexual arena together, getting to experience that and learn together and be students of each other. How yeah. exciting that is.
Absolutely. And really, then as a couple, we have a lifetime after
mm-hmm,
our wedding
mm-hmm.
to build our own experience together.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to be haunted by these other past thoughts, and the enemy can get in there and just that can roll downhill in a hurry.
Absolutely.
Of all the comparisons, and am I enough? And what if they're thinking about somebody else when they're with me? And do I measure up to everybody else
mm-hmm.
that they've been with? And all these other things that, you know, by waiting, all that is removed.
Mm-hmm.
That all is taken away. And so there's definitely no truth to the experience is going to lead to somehow better or deeper intimacy.
Well, and I know too, just one more thing to add was that when you have been in a sexual relationship or you've been dating and been involved in sex for, you know, years before marriage, you know, you walk into marriage and some of the things that we were reading was like, especially if you've been with one partner for a very, very long time, it doesn't take a whole lot of time after, you know, marriage to lose some of that, you know, sexual excitement and all that. So if you're in the grocery line and you're looking at the magazines, everything is about how to spice up your sex life and
yeah.
how to, you know, add certain elements in. Well, if you've experienced that 10 to 15 years before marriage versus waiting,
mm-hmm.
you know, again, that's one of those things, again, that you don't have to deal with. You're not having
yeah.
to spice it up because, again, you've got this whole learning curve in these years and years and years to be together because you have waited.
That's right.
Till you've gotten married.
Absolutely. Well, myth number three, let's get into that one.
Okay.
Myth three, I've already blown it. Therefore, abstinence is not an option. And I know maybe many listeners, maybe this is the camp they're in. Maybe if you're a parent, maybe you already know that your child has blown it, unfortunately. Or if you're a single adult and maybe you've never been married, or if you're single again. And you're like, well, why be committed to abstinence now? I've already experienced this. I'm no longer a virgin. One of the things, reading about Sean's story, the current bachelor, this term of reclaimed virginity, or I saw it termed another way in another article, this secondary virginity. And really, it's a thought I want to put out there because, you know, we can't go back and undo.
Right.
But just because we have crossed a certain line, and maybe say, okay, technically I will never be a virgin again. There is this idea of reclaiming that virginity and kind of driving the stake in the ground and say, from this point forward, this is my stance. And that's really where Sean is. Sean's story, The Bachelor, is he had been sexually active in college. But at some point along the way, he wanted to stop, as he put it, the vicious cycle. And he decided, until marriage, from that point forward, until he was married, he wanted to save himself and wait. And so that may be the place, because the myth is, if we're already blown it, might as well, you know, be
Let
all
me just
in.
Go all in. And I think, too, just to speak to those who maybe desire to have a reclaimed virginity, or maybe something has happened to you that is outside of your control. Maybe you've been abused, or, you know, different things like that, that again, you're coming back to be able to reclaim that, because some people have desire to withstand and to wait until they're married, but due to certain circumstances outside your control, you again may feel like, okay, this scenario has happened to me, therefore I'm not a virgin anymore. No, absolutely not. That is an opportunity again for you to reclaim that and take that back.
Yeah, let's don't lose it on technicality here. Okay,
right.
Technically you've blown it. There was a bad decision made, or something like you mentioned, outside of your control. It's almost like if seeing all those beautiful gowns the other night that the girls were dressed in. If in one of those beautiful, gorgeous gowns, there was a little blemish, a little stain, something got spilled with Friday night's meal. You know, it'd almost be like with this myth, if I've got a little stain, I might as well go practice lacrosse in this gown because it's ruined because of this little stain. No, you work on that stain. Let's clean the stain. That doesn't mean that everything has changed forevermore and it can never be redeemed. So just a thought, because that's where I think a lot of people are. Say, well, I've blown it, might as well, just give in completely.
Even the girl that decided to have sex with her boyfriend because she felt like she was committed. She really felt like this is the guy, I love him, and I have now given myself to him, and it has not worked out.
Yeah.
And she's dealing with all that guilt and all that shame, and, well, now I'm not a virgin anymore. No, I say, start today, reclaim that virginity, and you now can make a step today to continue to hold out and to save yourself, just like Sean and The Bachelor did. He had some sexual experiences when he was in college, and he has made a decision, I am going to wait until marriage. Good for him that he has done that.
Absolutely. So,
and then myth number four, you want to talk about that?
Yeah. Myth four actually is one we think really, especially people from a Christian or faith-based perspective, it'd be easy to buy into this myth that if I'm a strong Christian, or if I'm really strong in my faith, then I wouldn't be tempted sexually. So if I am this really godly individual, man or woman, if that's true about me, then I'm not going to be sexually tempted. And it's a myth, because when we buy into that, there's all kind of places that can take us. The fact is, there's biological things happening, and this will kind of carry over into some of the practical steps we want to get into. But the reality is, God created us, and there's
sexual beings.
There's certain things that get turned on, and so I think for those who are trying to set boundaries, maybe if you're in a dating relationship and moving into some of these practical steps, it's understanding that. And because some, I think, they don't want to put a plan together, because it's almost like if they buy into this lie and this myth, well, why not need to put a plan together? Because if I'm this godly person, then that'll never be an issue. It is an issue, because, as you say, we're sexual beings, so we do need to have a plan. So let's just talk about some of the practical steps. So how do we flesh all this out, whether you're a parent that are trying to convey these principles and reasons to our children, or if you're single, never married, trying to, in a culture that preaches sex, 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 everybody's doing it and you're trying to go against that flow, or if you're single again and, mm-hmm. and find yourself, you know, single again after being married.
Well, and I'll just say that I asked a number of moms yesterday, including my own children, but I asked some moms yesterday, and kind of the theme was, well, I'm going to abstain because the Bible tells me so,
yeah.
you know, but I would say, yes, the answer is yes to that, but you have got to have a plan. So, yeah. I mean, just asking yourself the question, what is it that I want to do? You've got to have a plan.
Yeah. What is my stance and conviction? You know, mm-hmm. You hear the term abstinence, but maybe you've never really thought through what your own current stand is. Maybe you find yourself again,
right.
Single again, and now you're having to think about these mm-hmm. things. I think to not have a plan basically is like, okay, I'm just going to figure it out as I go.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty much we're guaranteeing failure in that because
right.
the cultural message is so strong
right.
and so relentless. This is definitely the minority stance
right.
to take the stance of abstinence. So if we're going to take that minority stand, we've got to have a very clearly defined plan and strategy
mm-hmm.
for how
mm-hmm.
this is going to happen, which then gets into you know, having a plan, but also having an exit strategy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not putting ourselves in position and circumstances where things kind of, the engine gets turned on, but yet somehow we're going to shut it off, you know, right before, you know, the last second, you know, to put it, not, you know, that may be as a parent not allowing your child excuse me to watch a movie, let's say downstairs on, you know, with no supervision,
mm-hmm.
you know, watching a movie, and this leads to this and this leads to this, and then pretty soon you're in a situation, you know, just not allowing your children to be in a situation where they're alone, you know, with the opposite sex would
right
be
right one. we've got our son that's actually currently dating somebody right now, and there's a number of things that as parents we want to talk to him about, you know. What are some safety nets that he has in place? You know, planned activities, you know, going out on group dates, or even going out on double dating, or, you know, not putting yourself, just like you said, in a situation where every single time that you're dating, you're watching a movie in the dark or whatever. I mean, what girl wants to every single time that she goes out with a guy watch a movie anyway? There's not a whole lot of talking time and all that goes into it. So plan activities where you can enjoy each other and engage each other, but that you are you know, successful. You can
yeah.
be successful. But again, just like you said a minute ago, have an emergency plan. You don't
yeah.
create emergency plan in the moment. You know,
yeah.
emergency plans are created pre-emergency. You know, you
yeah.
there's an emergency plan at school. There's an emergency plan at work. You've got to have an emergency plan already planned out so that in that moment, in the heat of the moment or whatever, you know what you need to do. And it's not, this is my decision, and so it's, you know, if I'm the girl and this is the decision that I made, it is up to my partner or up to my boyfriend or my future spouse or whatever to stop that. It
yeah.
is my, it is my strategy, it is my conviction, it's my stance, and I've got to make sure
yeah.
that I do that.
So you're saying that you can't put that strategy together on the fly while in the back seat
no.
of a parked car, you know, kind of come up with, okay, what now that I'm in this situation, what am I going to do?
No, not going to work.
Yeah.
Not going to work. But I would, you know, Trey, speak to this too, because I know that there's some mamas out there that are kind of like, okay, so what if, you know, just in case that they may fail,
mm-hmm.
you know, what do I do? You know, maybe I do need to go on and give, you know, I think some mamas think, okay, for their girls, you know, we can have this strategy or whatever, but, you know, boys will just be boys.
Yeah.
Well, I've got two girls and two boys. I'm not planning a different strategy for my girls or
sure.
for my boys.
Yeah.
It is their responsibility. You know, if they fail, then there's going to be some, obviously, some consequences that they may open themselves up to, just like we talked about disease or pregnancy or all those types of things. But it's not boys will be boys, or, you know, should we have this, you know, condom in the glove compartment just in case, you
yeah.
know, talk to that a little bit.
Well, you can't say, okay, here's my strategy, but okay, I'm also going to give them the safety net.
Right.
Because first of all, the fallacy of that is that, you know, it definitely Planned Parenthood puts this out there relentlessly, but there's condom is not a fail-safe
right.
way of having sex.
Absolutely.
People every day, of those 10,000 today that will get a STD from having premarital sex, some of them will do so even having used quote unquote safe sex with a condom. It's mm-hmm. not 100% mm-hmm. fail-safe guarantee. So if we're giving them this safety message net. Of abstinence, mm-hmm. and then at the same time we're saying, but just in case, here's a condom.
It's a very mixed message.
It is a mixed message. Yes. And kids are like, well, they're giving me the out, basically. And they're basically saying they don't trust me. They're saying Absolutely. That maybe I can't do it. So why mm-hmm. are they telling me to do it if they're also maybe deep down don't believe I can do it? I've had at least five guys in our recovery community that have told me that, one, their parents never talked about it, mm-hmm. Which was confusing in and of itself. They're having to kind of, you know, go down these and kind of this terrain figured out on their own.
Right.
But then the dad, just all of a sudden, there's this assumption, well, I know you're having sex. So it's just like one day out of the blue. And again, this is five different situations where the dad just basically said, well, I know you're having sex, but here, at least use a condom. Mm-hmm. And in all five of these situations, my friend was like, I wasn't having sex. Mm. You know, I was trying to do the right thing. And I thought that I wasn't supposed to. And I was trying to do the right thing by not having it. But man, what a mixed message when all of a sudden dad says, well, here, use a condom. You know, he hadn't talked to me any at all about sex. And that's a whole nother show. We'll talk mm-hmm. about that. Mm-hmm. But here he was sending. So I was like, well,
I know you're going to fail. So yeah. Let me go on and give you this.
Or I know you're already failing. Yeah, yeah. I know you're already having sex, which yeah. in this case. So what a real confusing message.
And really, you know, just I guess just as, this is really more of an opinion than anything else. To me, that's almost a way out. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's almost like, here's my excuse, you know, because, again, the hard part is talking to your kids or making a decision as a student or as a teenager or as a parent or as a single parent, whatever, you know, whatever role you're in, making a decision and then talking about it, being able to talk about it with other people, holding each other accountable, all the things that go into play. It's a lot easier just to hand your child or your student or whatever a pill or a condom to say, just in case.
Yeah.
But I think to be able to be proactive and to talk about it and to talk about what's going on out there, I mean, it's almost like you get to be, you know, you get to be a game changer because everybody else is doing that. That's and, right. you know, if that's what your stance ends up being.
Absolutely. Well, let's, as we're kind of getting ready to close, there may be some that, yeah, this is some good ideas or whatever. I'm not really sure. There was, I think, just some practical things as mm-hmm. we talk about the fact that sex, it's not just a physical act.
Right.
We are created in the image of our Heavenly Father as body, soul, and spirit. We're three different dimensions mm-hmm. to us, not just a body. This body is going to waste away,
right.
but our spirit is going to live forever. So every time we're having sex, and this is, again, back to why there's such parameters around this to protect mm-hmm. this gift. Every time we have sex, every time we're giving ourselves physically in that way, we are connecting with that other individual, body, soul, and spirit.
You're actually giving a piece of them,
yeah,
a piece of yourself to
absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely. And so you've got so many people and individuals are getting married later and later. Mm-hmm. And so if you've got, let's say you're 30 before you get married, and now from dating age, let's say 15 to 30, that's 15 years of giving yourself and pieces of yourself away. Mm-hmm. And then you finally get married. There's a whole lot of baggage there.
Yeah,
a lot of things absolutely. Now you're bringing into this new relationship.
That you didn't even necessarily have to bring in.
Absolutely. So just a final illustration. One thing, just a piece of tape. You know, think about you take tape and you pull the tape apart and you immediately stick that tape together. And I've got some duct tape here. You know, taking those pieces of duct tape, stick it together, you will be hard-pressed to be able to pull those two pieces of tape together. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But take that same two pieces of tape and then stick them on your sleeve, on your arm, on your pants, you know, on the wall, pull it off. And after doing all that, then try to stick those two pieces together. They simply don't stick. Mm. And it's such, you know,
because of all the elements that are on the tape. Right?
Absolutely. So as we finally say, this is the person I want to be married to. Mm-hmm. I want to give myself to them. I want it to be special. I want my wedding night to be special. We want that relationship to stick. Mm-hmm. And when we have given ourselves away, as you mentioned, to so many different people, it just simply makes it harder to stick. Not that it's impossible,
right.
but certainly right. harder, because marriage is hard enough mm-hmm. as it is.
Absolutely.
We married as virgins and we wound up divorcing even in spite of that.
Right.
But we're definitely overcoming more and more obstacles if we've given ourselves away over and over and over again.
Absolutely.
So guys, this is just really touching the iceberg on this subject of abstinence. You know, there's obviously many, many different directions you can go with this, but hopefully this has been helpful. Hopefully it's at least given you some things to think about. We are privileged and blessed to be able to be a part of the Big Brains Media group. They have a number of incredible, incredible shows, lots of great content. Go to bigbrainsmedia.com to see the full lineup. New shows are being added all the time there. And we're just grateful to be a part of that and what Big Brains Media is doing. Getting in touch with us. Maybe you want to continue this discussion, or maybe there's something that we didn't touch on that you want to ask about.
Or have a comment.
Yes. We want that feedback. You can get in touch with us via email. Melody is available at melody@undoneredone.com. I'm at trailer@undoneredone.com. We're both also on Twitter, but check us out on Facebook as well. That's probably the best place to leave a comment, to get in on this discussion. Maybe if there's something that you didn't agree with that we were talking about, or maybe something that we just touched on that you really would like for us to flesh out a little bit more, we would love to dialogue with you there through Facebook. It's facebook.com/undoneredone, and you'll find links there that we put out from time to time, just kind of building a community around these discussions as we go. So check us out there. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in.
Yes, thanks for being here today.
Yeah, consider telling a friend about Undone Redone. Again, this is our fourth episode, so we're super excited about these opportunities and just thankful that you are tuning in. So until next time, my name is Trailer.
And I'm Melody.
Have a great day, guys.